I'll now ask Peter Taff, General Secretary of the Socialist Party, to speak.
Comrade Chair and comrades, it seems incredible that the general election was only a week ago. And the truth of the matter was that that general election, until decision day a week ago, was probably one of the most boring elections in history, particularly the character of a presidential campaign between the three party leaders. In fact, it was so presidential, some of our comrades reported, in Lewisham I think it was, when they were on the polling state, polling booth a week ago, working class women came out complaining, "What kind of election is this?" And they said, "Well, what do you mean?" He said, "But the candidates weren't on the ballot paper." And they inquired, "What do you mean by that?" "Well, the leaders of the parties weren't on the ballot paper." And we had to remind, our comrades had to remind, those working class women that this was not a presidential campaign. It was a campaign that was being conducted by parties that had to be leaders. And that indicates the character of that general election campaign up until election day itself. Yet, the whole political patient Britain has changed almost like a crack of thunder since that event of a week ago, and particularly the outcome of that event. The attendance here at this meeting tonight, which is almost like a Soviet, by the way, with people outside the door, people here facing the audience and not the speaker, is an indication itself of the quickening of political interest. And we say to those working class men and women, young and old, who are here tonight, we hope to provide a forum like this evening, that can debate the burning issues that confront the working class movement in Britain. Because make no mistake about it, we are at a turning point, not just for those people who are political, who are interested. As Roger has indicated, we are at a turning point for the mass of the British working class people in Britain at this stage. In the 18th century, there was a well-known Lord Walpole who said, "They're ringing the bells today, and they'll be ringing their hands tomorrow." But there's no doubt about it. Since the advent of this coalition, of this Dem-Con coalition, as Paula pointed out, there has been hosannas in the City of London. One example of that. On Friday night, after the election, in a bar in the city, these wolves, these big businessmen, these people who carry the fate of working people in Britain on their shoulders, gathered together a group of investment bankers, and they spent £60,000 on champagne, one bottle of Methuselah of vintage crystal at £36,000 a bottle. They spent £60,000 celebrating the fact that they've made a bet on the outcome of the general election itself. There's no doubt whatsoever about it that the city and big business wanted a Tory government. Or the next thing, and in effect, a Tory government in disguise in the form of the present Lib Dem coalition itself. This is a minor earthquake in terms of the effect that it's going to have in Britain in the next period. It is a government of the rich. Clegg is in effect a Tory boy. The press even described him this morning as a fag for Cameron, in the sense of those people who run around after people in Eton at the present time. Laws, who I met in a radio program, when I was doing a radio program 3 years ago, "This is a liberal, but he's a multi-millionaire. He's got a chiseled face." I don't want to be personal here, but it reminds me of the phrase of the sharp-faced people who did well out of the Second World War. This government has graciously accepted a 5% cut in its wages today, announced this evening. It would be like a drop of water on a hot stove, as far as these millionaires and multimillionaires are concerned. Hume is also a banker. Cable was a top executive, a CEO in the oil industry. As a matter of fact, this Orange Book representatives in the Tory party are like Blair in the Labour Party. It's quite clear they're like entrants into the Labour Party. We didn't enter the Labour Party. We were born into the Labour Party when it was a workers' party. They have entered the Labour Party. Blair took it over and created a capitalist party and resulted in this disaster today. The Orange Book wing that has now entered into this coalition in the Liberal Party has done the same in relation to the Liberal Party itself. You had the spectacle this morning that in the pages of The Guardian, there was a whole page in the letters column of sincere, almost social democratic elements in the Liberal Party, some of them, by the way, to the left of the present leaders, certainly, and some members of the Labour Party, who expressed their disgust of their leaders entering into a coalition with the Tory enemy. And as one of the commentators said, well, the Liberals have now become Marxists, not in our sense, certainly not Trotskyists, but Groucho Marxists, who said, these are my principles, and if you don't like them, I'll change them right away. And that is actually what has taken place in the way that these people have acted in the last period. If Cameron wouldn't have rushed into a coalition of one kind or another, he was finished, it's quite clear, in the Tory party. That's why, against everything that they said before, and as, by the way, we predicted in our article in the paper, the Tories have now adopted a form of proportional representation, so-called. It'd be more like the alternative vote. They still hope to defeat that, by the way, because they've accepted the referendum, and in a free vote, they hope to defeat that in the course of the election itself. The Rainbow Coalition was a non-starter as far as many of the parties themselves are concerned. And by the way, in a rainbow, it doesn't have the colour brown. So even if it would have been put together, it was unlikely that Brown would have remained as the Prime Minister itself. Look at the lengths to which they've been prepared to go to stitch up this coalition. And they've done it from the point of view of what is the overriding interest of the rich and the powerful in Britain today. They've dropped, for instance, the Tory proposal on inheritance tax. I'll take you back to the discussion of, 3 years ago, when Brown was first elected. Brown was about to go to an election, which undoubtedly at that stage he would have won. And Osborne made a speech at the Tory party conference in which he said they would raise the threshold to £1 million, and immediately Brown panicked and called off the election. That's been thrown overboard in order to stitch together this particular position in relation to the government itself. We shouldn't forget in this discussion tonight that the reason for this defeat is the existence of a right-wing government that abandoned any semblance of representing working class people in the form of the Blair government before and the Brown government that has just been defeated in this election. New Labour lost one third of their votes compared to 1997. They had some victories because of the turnout, not because of their policies, as I will explain. But one of those victories was in the city of Liverpool, where for the first time since the overthrow, people like Roger and our comrades in the council, it's been dominated by the Lib Dems apart from a short period after we were overthrown. Now it's being returned to a Labour council after that period because of the movement of working people that has taken place. But on a national level, there are whole areas of Britain now that doesn't have a Labour MP. There are counties like Kent that does not have a Labour MP. And by the way, it would have been much worse, as Ian pointed out, and as Paula pointed out, but for the existence of lesser evilism. And didn't we warn? Didn't the Socialist Party warn 12 months in advance? But once an election took place, working people seeing the enemy at the gate, seen the barbarians ready to enter number 10 Downing Street, against their will, they would actually go into the ballot box, and even when they sympathise with us, in trust for an independent workers' party, afraid of the consequences of a Tory government, lesser evilism would be manifested. We even said, how many times did we say, that working people would hold their nose and vote for New Labour? And lo and behold, in the election, Margaret Hodge was seen on the television, campaigning, embarking, and one worker said, well, why should I vote for you? You've got, you've cut up the services, you've played into the hands of the BNP, and an appeal to this particular worker was, please hold your nose and vote for me in the election. It was a most striking manifestation of the nose and letter evilism, if you like, in relation to the election itself. In certain areas of the country, of course, Labour actually increased its vote, despite the policies that were put forward, in the case, for instance, of Scotland. At local level, again despite themselves, in our area of Walthamstow, where we met with sympathy, as comrades will explain, probably the most successful campaign we have launched in a general election in terms of the sympathy, the support, the interest, some of it expressed at this meeting here this evening, that many people nevertheless went out and voted Labour, and now it's a clean sweep virtually for Labour in that particular constituency itself. That has consequences. That is a manifestation of the law of unintended consequences. Because now at local level, against the background that nationally Cameron and Clegg will take the axe to public expenditure, of course in the civil service, and we will fight that as I will show, but at local level, who will be the agencies now of the attacks of this Tory government, of this coalition? It will be local councils, many of them Labour, by the way. They will now face the choice that we faced in Liverpool and elsewhere in 1983. And it's a much worse choice in terms of working class people. And we were attacked by the national government, by the Tories, by Thatcher at that stage, who said you have to cut. We said no, not one job, not one service would go down. We're against tax increases and we're opposed to an increase in VAT, which is being proposed at the present time. And we said we organise a mass movement to resist the Thatcher juggernaut, and we defeated Thatcher, even though we were isolated and abandoned by 20 councils after that. And that is the choice that is going to have to be made by these Labour councils up and down the country in the next period. If the movement fails, make no mistake about this. The attacks that we see unfolding with tragic consequences in Greece at the present time, that will be the fate of the working class in the next period. Don't listen to all the guff during the election from Osborne. We're all in this together. Of Cameron on the number 10 Downing Street with Clegg at his side, in what was love bombing one another, so to speak, in that particular nauseating example of yesterday. Don't believe what they said when they argued, well, we will protect the weak and the vulnerable. Don't take our word for it. Go to Fulham and see, in Hammersmith and Fulham, and see a 90-year-old woman where her home help was withdrawn, of a youth club arbitrarily closed down, with the kids thrown out onto the streets at the present time. This is not theory. This is the actual experience of working people by these coalitions at local level that will be repeated nationally. And for those who say, well, what can we do? They've got the majority and they're trying to cement their majority with a change in the law. I'll deal with that a little bit later on. Again, I refer to you, as Roger indicated, to what has happened in Greece. It takes a leap of the imagination to realise that the Papandreou government in Greece was brought to power 6 months ago. It had a landslide, much bigger than the majority, so-called, that this coalition has got at the present time. The trade union leaders dragged their feet. But once it really was born in on the working class of Greece, what was intended that we've had this ferocious upheaval that has taken place in Greece. It wasn't Papandreou who came in with the roar of thunder. He didn't sneak in the back door, so to speak, like Clegg and Cameron, and the working class in Greece have responded really in the last couple of weeks to what is, in effect, a semi-insurrectionary general strike. And think for a moment of the forces involved in this dramatic confrontation. How many times did you hear in the last week, in Greece, in Spain, in Portugal, you have to cut the deficit because the markets won't like it? What are the markets? First of all, they told lies in relation to Greece, where they said, well, the Greek workers were living the life of Riley. That's what they said to the Irish workers. They retired at 53 or 57. It's an outright lie. The Greek workers retire at 65, and that's going to be increased to 67. And then we have this strange proposal. Well, the Greek workers have a 13th and a 14th month of wages, which is true in a sense. But all that is done because of the low wages of the Greek workers. Workers in Athens are living on 500 euros a month, not a week. A teacher exists, if she's lucky, he or she is lucky, on 1,000 euros a week at the present time. And what is this market? This dictatorship that is holding a gun to the heads of the Greek government, soon the Spanish government, and following that the Portuguese government, and this government, if it doesn't come to heel. What is this market, this spherical object, so to speak, that exists out there? It's not something abstract. It's 18 to 20 bond raiders who, if they don't get their way, organise a conspiracy against the currency of a particular country. If you don't believe me, it's a marvellous speech that our comrade Joe Higgins made in an article in the European Parliament, in which he pointed out that a meeting took place in February of this year of 18 hedge funds, including Soros Fund Management of an equity of 9 billion, of 10,000 of these funds that control 2,200 billion internationally, and they took a decision to target the euro, and in particular to target the debt of Greece. And what was the net result of that? Because of this attack, of this wolf pack, that's how it's described in the press, what happened is that the interest on Greek debt rose, and the consequence was, already a poor country is having to pay 750 million more on interest on a 5 billion loan to Germany, the 5 billion loan compared to what Germany, the richest country in Europe, would pay at the present time. That's the consequence of this wolf pack and the lies that they're telling at the present time. And the result, as I said, was that the Greek workers were not accepting it. It came out in a semi-insurrectionary immense general strike of just over a week ago, of 200,000 to 300,000, where you had, unfortunately, the anarchists who firebombed, as we know, a bank. The responsibility for that, by the way, yes, some of the anarchists were responsible, and they were condemned by us and by the working class, but the employers locked up the workers in the bank on the day of the strike. They had no fire equipment because of the corruption in Greece. You pay the fire brigade, and you keep one little sprinkler, and in that way you get a fire certificate, and therefore the employers are responsible for the deaths of those workers themselves. The day after that strike, a representative of the Greek employers appeared on 24 Hours BBC, and he said, well, the government just about controls the parliament, but the Greek Communist Party and the left coalition of Syriza, in which our comrades in Greece are involved, they control the streets. That was a slight exaggeration, by the way. But what is true is that this force of the working class, in effect, has controlled the streets of Greece in the last period itself. And we have a very contradictory situation that no doubt we will see in Britain, where you'll get workers saying, well, we have to do something about the debt. 53% say, well, we must tackle the debt. But of course, when it comes to them paying the price for the debt, they're absolutely opposed in sackings, in the cutting of services and so on. But at least in Greece, they have a left organisation like Syriza. It's giving a left alternative at this stage and is attempting to show a way forward. Our comrade Joe Higgins is going to a meeting in Athens tomorrow to speak at a mass meeting with the leader of Syriza itself. It's not just in Greece. Only yesterday, Zapatero, the Prime Minister of Spain, after, by the way, Barack Obama phoned him and said, you've got to take drastic action against the working class. He did the same thing, by the way, to Merkel in Germany only a couple of days before in relation to the rescue package for the euro. But Obama phoned Zapatero, and what was the result? 20% unemployment in Spain today, something like 30-35% of the youth, and yet this government is cutting a 5% cut in state workers' wages, a freeze in pensioners' income, and the net result will be to depress demand in already a depressionary situation. The Spanish workers with their tradition are not going to take this lying down, no more than the Greek workers, and therefore we have comrades from our international, passed me a note in relation to this, that there was a meeting of the UGT, the Socialist Party Trade Union, whose leader said, by the way, they're breaking from the Socialist Party of Zapatero because of the attacks on the living standards of the workers. Perhaps that could be followed in unison in relation to New Labour with the cuts that are coming. But they had a meeting with the Workers' Commission and the UGT, and they said that they're going for a public sector general strike on June the 2nd. This is where the fight back begins. It's not just in Spain. It's in Portugal, where already the government is cutting back on the infrastructure. Even in Ireland, which has been lagging behind because of the trade union leaders, a movement is brewing there against the attacks on the living standards of the working class. And even in Germany, the strongest country in Europe, the powerhouse of Europe, the governmental power of the CDU in a coalition with the FDP has just lost 10% of its support in the election in the biggest state of North Rhine-Westphalia. The FDP has lost. And anybody who has illusions that Labour will gain automatically in Britain in this situation as a reaction to the Tories, the Social Democratic Party of Germany, similar to the Labour Party in Britain, has actually lost support in this election. And why? Because there's a left party, which is an alternative pole of attraction that has gained in this state and has entered the regional parliament for the first time. The bourgeois in Britain hope with collaboration with the Wolf Pack to attack the $167 billion deficit that exists in Britain. We have to again ask the question. Particularly I would pose it to the new comrades, brothers and sisters who are here tonight. Why and who is responsible for this debt? Who accumulated this debt? First of all, it's a product of capitalism. That's the first thing to say. What is capitalism? It's based upon a system of production for profit and not social need. In the course of this present devastating crisis, 10% of the wealth of Britain has been destroyed. Nouriel Roubini, a well-known capitalist economist, says 30% of industry is lying idle in the American economy today, and there's 30 million unemployed, if you count the full-time unemployed and the part-time unemployed. Why? Is it an act of God? Does it drop from the sky? No, it's man-made, to be more precise. It's a product of the system of capitalism itself, which will continue if this situation is allowed to go on. You have the government now saying that they're going to introduce a cut of $8 billion this year. That's just the beginning, by the way. If they're going to tackle this deficit, you're talking about £50 billion cuts in Britain. That means half the NHS will go, according to experts in this field. This is an unparalleled situation that we face if we allow, that is the Labour movement, allows them to get away with it. When the governor of the Bank of England stepped forward on the television yesterday and said, I approve everything this government is doing, what a crushing condemnation of Gordon Brown. Who gave him the right to speak publicly in this way? Gordon Brown, when he created an independent Bank of England. He was a civil servant before that. Now he's acting as a spokesman for big business and for the City of London itself. A man who's in America now, David Blanchflower, who sat on the Monetary Policy Committee of the Bank of England, immediately said, if these measures are carried through, unemployment, which stands at 8.5%, with 1 million young people unemployed today, without the prospect of getting a job, not a Saturday job or a job over the summer to get by, but even becoming a burger flipper, will be ruled out for a whole generation if we allow this situation to continue. And he said you will have 20% unemployment. Not us, not the Socialist Party, not Marxists, not men and women with a knife between their teeth, as our enemies try to picture us, but a sober banker says you will have 20% unemployment. In other words, you'll be in the same situation as we have in Spain at the present time. We're going to resist this. And the working class and the labour movements are going to resist. And anybody who doubts that only has to look at the determination of the BA workers. The turnout was a bit less than before. But a 20-day strike, despite the intimidation that has been proposed by this antediluvian management of Welsh. Look at what's coming in the RMT where tube lines, where they bankrupted it because of PFI. And in effect, it's going to be taken back in-house, and yet at the same time, by in effect nationalising tube lines, they intend to sack thousands of workers in order to discredit the principle of nationalisation. We say we stand for real nationalisation, but for democratic workers' control and management. To the 20 hedge funds, to the wolf pack, who are holding a gun, to the heads of the working people of Europe, we say take over their assets. That means, by the way, you can't do it in one country. The struggle is interconnected. That's why we stand for socialism in Britain, but also for the Socialist Confederation of Europe. We're against narrow nationalism. The interests of the working class are international, first and foremost, on a continental level in Europe as a whole. The PCS was out. The Civil Service Union, where we have an important voice, was out on strike in the course of today's situation. It is even possible, given the avalanche of redundancies that will take place and the attacks that will take place, that the working class and certainly the more developed sections of the trade union labour movement will say, well, let's just concentrate on the trade union struggle. And we intend to fully participate because we have important points of support in the trade union and labour movement in Britain. And we intend to resist, but there will be an avalanche of strikes, but purely an industrial struggle alone is not sufficient in this situation. It's true, when the working class is checked on the political plane in Britain, it turns to the industrial plane. Lost in the situation that we have in Britain is a position similar to Spain, where the public sector general strike will be posed. The first step, however, an enormous step forward would be for a mass demonstration organised by the trade unions in London of public sector workers to give notice that we're not going to have an attack on the living standards of the working class. And by the way, anybody who's doubtful of what a small force can do in this situation, take this letter which Joe Higgins has sent out with others in the left group in the European Parliament. And in it, there is Joe Higgins. There is Nicholas Tsuantis from Syriza in Greece. There's the Left Party of Denmark. There's Akel from Cyprus. There's the Left Bloc in Portugal. There is another organisation. The Communist Party of Portugal has also taken it up. And what are the demands that have been made? Very simple. Workers must not pay for the crisis. Make the super rich and bankers pay. Solidarity with the Greek workers for unity of working people across Europe. No to cutbacks in wage cuts, unemployment and so on. No to privatisation of public services. End the dictatorship of finance markets and so on. Stop the bailouts of the banks. Nationalise the banks and financial institutions in the interests of working people. That's the beginning, at least, of a programme to get support on a European level itself. And we say to this government, by the way, they're talking about democracy and we're all in it together. they proposed within one day of coming to power that they actually changed the so-called hallowed, unwritten British constitution. They're going to introduce now that a vote of confidence can only pass if you get 55% in Parliament and the removal of the government. That's an example of parliamentary dictatorship, by the way, of what we call parliamentary Bonapartism. But why are they taking measures of this character? It shows how serious they are in confronting the working class and the labour movement. It shows how determined they are in attacking all the past gains of the working class. And equally, we have to show how determined we are in actually meeting this and combating this. And this is not just a trade union struggle. It's also a political struggle. That's why the creation of Trust was an important step forward. Our party has grown and will grow in this situation. But we have a wider interest in mobilising the biggest possible force of workers who are looking for a socialist and a broad left alternative. Marx had that attitude. Engels had that attitude where he said, the socialists are the movement of the future in the movement of the present. In other words, we don't counterpose our interests to the general interests of the working class that needs a broad political party in order to organise the struggle in the next period itself. Unfortunately, we were squeezed in this election. And there will be some people who will say, ha ha ha, look at the small vote that Trust has got. I say to them, what is your alternative? We hear from some of them that they should go back into the Labour Party and they should try and change the situation. We say to them, we don't change our course. We fight for a new mass workers' party. Your scoffs and insults are only an historical repetition of what Keir Hardie and the pioneers of the labour movement faced when they stood and initially got very little support. 15 candidates in the first election when they stood. And some of the trade union leaders said, give it up and go back into the Liberal Party in effect. Where would we have been in all the battles of the 20th century if that advice would have been listened to? Some in despair now are looking towards Labour. We have the trade union leaders and we have the leadership of Unison, of Dave Prentice, who will say, we're going to put pressure on the trade union leaders. Lenny McCluskey, who's now seen as the left candidate in the elections in the Unite Union, said in a meeting in Swansea a couple of days ago that they're going to give it 3 years and they're going to put resources into the Labour Party. Unfortunately, we've heard it all before. Tony Woodley said the same thing. Millions were poured into the Labour Party, but they hardly convinced a handful of workers to go into the Labour Party because it wasn't possible when it's flooded out with careerists. Miliband is the front runner. You only have to say that to show how difficult, if not impossible, it will be, and probably he will be elected. He might stand against his brother, Abel against Cain. I don't know who's going to murder whom in the course of the election. Let's see. Some people would say both, metaphorically speaking, of course, because we're not anarchists and terrorists, so to speak. But I heard him on the radio tonight, and he said there was one worker said to him, but I didn't vote New Labour. I'm a socialist. I stand for all Labour. And he said to this individual, my friend, what do you mean you're the socialist? He said, I stand for socialism, for the change, and so on. This is on Radio 4, the 5 o'clock programme. And this Miliband said, but what do you think of the minimum wage? Well, it was okay. It's minimal. It should be called the minimal wage, not the minimum wage. But it's minimal. But that's an indication of justice. In other words, the programme is social justice. That's the programme of liberalism. The labour movement used to have a clause 4 which stood for a fundamental socialist change to take over the commanding heights of the economy. That's the music of the future as far as the official leadership of the Labour Party is concerned. John Macdonald has been re-elected, the left MP for Hayes and Harlington. In a way, that's good. Some of the left MPs got reasonable votes in the election itself. It's largely through turnout, but in some cases, probably because they struggled on behalf of working people, it's a minority. But John Macdonald probably won't get enough because of the diminishing of the left in the Labour Party. The Parliamentary Labour Party won't get enough to be nominated. But I'd say to Lenny McCluskey, I'd say to Dave Prentice, you're serious about a challenge in the Labour Party. We're not dogmatists. We will fight to build our own party, but we'll struggle to swing the movement towards the left. We say to them, if you are really serious, you have illusions in the Labour Party. We don't share your illusions, but we'll help you to try and change the Labour Party, if you like. But the first thing to do is demand of all the candidates to have a programme for the elimination of all the anti-union laws. Secondly, that they expel the right-wing Tory interests from the Labour Party, the Blairites, and readmit all those on the left who've been expelled. That would be a good test of their position itself. And then we would offer, you wouldn't necessarily go into the Labour Party in that situation, we offer a united front. We would also say to Dave Prentice, you're interested in a left candidate. You're interested in changing the Labour Party. Why isn't Unison swinging behind John McDonnell as an alternative to the right within the Labour Party? By the way, you only have to pose this to show how unrealistic it is that the leaders of these trade unions will take it up. Unfortunately, unlike in the past, unlike in 1931, there is no mass left wing in the Labour Party. There's a small rump within the Labour Party. The ILP did represent, in the first coalition government of 1935, a mass left wing. The real left wing is developing outside, in the factories, in the workplaces, in the movements that will be taking place in the next period. This government thinks they can steamroller over the opposition. They're planning for 5 years in power. Let's see, it might not even be 5 months. We'll see once the working class in Britain begins to move. They hope to tie it all up at the top. This is parliamentary shadows. This is not the reality on the ground of the lives and conditions of working people itself. A new generation will fight. For instance, on tuition fees that will be enormously increased. Where you have in universities now, they're closing down whole departments like a philosophy department. King's College is closing down. The roles that opened up to your mothers and fathers, the glimpse of the future by getting an education, is going to be closed off. You will be the condemned generation unless you fight, unless you organise. That's why we have maintained the Socialist Party and we've developed this party to the position that we have at the present time. We say take over the assets of the 20 bond raiders. Organise it on a European scale. A socialist confederation with democratic nationalisation at its heart. Capitalism can find no way out. Socialism is the future of the working class of Britain, of Europe and the world. If you agree with our ideas, join us. One individual, one, to the struggle today, to the ideas of socialism can influence 100 and 1,000 in the charged political atmosphere that will develop in the next period. Let us forge the political weapons that can defeat this coalition, that can defeat capitalist barbarism, and let's create a society of human solidarity, the idea of socialism that the movement campaigned for at its outset and now has never been more necessary than to save working people and particularly the new generation from capitalist barbarism in Britain and on a world scale. Thank you.